This is Colorado Matters from Colorado Public Radio. I'm Ryan Warner. A man you might call Denver's paleontologist-in-chief heads to the Smithsonian next week to lead the National Museum of Natural History. Kirk Johnson has been the chief curator at the Denver Museum of Nature and Science for more than two decades, and he ends his career here on a high note, having led the huge 2010 excavation near Snowmass of mastodons, mammoths, Ice Age bison, and giant sloths. Johnson also studied the oldest rainforest in the world, just south of Denver. He told CPR's Andrea Dukakis just how hard it was to consider leaving Denver.
Colorado and the Rocky Mountains are the world's fossil treasure trove, and it's an amazing place to find fossils. There are things everywhere around Colorado and the surrounding states, and it's been a real pleasure to be digging them up for the last 22 years.
And what were your first thoughts when you were offered the job?
Well, initially, I didn't want to go. I was like, I love working in Denver and working at the Denver Museum of Nature and Science. It's an amazing museum. But then I talked to several people, and they're like, look, this is the nation's museum. And when I started digging into it, I realized this is a huge opportunity to work at the world's largest natural history museum as the director, has 7.5 million visitors, got 130 million objects, 200 scientists. It's an amazing place.
And how does that compare in scale to the Denver Museum?
Well, the Denver Museum has about 1.4 million objects, and the Smithsonian has about 130 million objects. So it's about 100 times larger in terms of its collections, and way more scientists and way more visitors. So the impact of working in a place like that has real potential.
What does the National Museum need most right now? What are some of your goals?
Well, it has really great scientists, great collections, and huge visitors. And I think the goal is really to connect all those things. You think about it, most people can't name a living American scientist, which is an amazing thing. We have hundreds of thousands of scientists and say, name a scientist. Most people can't do it. So I want this museum to put the friendly face on science. Remember, at museums, you have millions of kids who are just a wall away from really cool scientists, and it's just a matter of connecting the dots.
Some names of great scientists that are alive today?
Well, there are tons and tons, but you think about the people like Scott Sampson, who is the person who made these big discoveries of dinosaurs in southwestern Utah. Now he has this show called The Dinosaur Train, and he's Dr. Scott. And that's a scientist that kids can name. You know, he's one of the few people, and I think, who else can they name? And you realize that it is just simply something that is lost from our culture. It used to be that Einstein was a name everybody knew, or Stephen Jay Gould. And usually when people talk, they really will come up with the name of a dead scientist or an alive scientist. So it's one of the problems we're trying to solve is how to get science a friendly face so that people can really realize that it's underlying so much of what we discover, and it helps us imagine how we can move forward in our rapidly changing world.
I heard someone once say that Kirk Johnson makes science fun for kids. How do you bring that skill to Washington?
That's in my DNA, so I think I'll keep doing that. But I think I have to do some making science fun for lawmakers and making science fun for adults in Washington, D.C. Science has so many cool stories that just haven't been told really well. And that's my goal, is to get the entire scientific staff up and running. And they're doing it now. We've got a really great staff of new scientists. A bunch of young scientists have joined the National Museum in the last couple of years. And they're people that I look at as great scientists who are great communicators. And that's the goal, is they really crank out some amazing science stories and get people very compelled by the concept of this process.
Let's talk about your time at the Denver Museum of Nature and Science. There have been a lot of highlights, most recently the Snowmass excavation. What was that like as a scientist?
Snowmass is really one of the most amazing things ever. It was a really lucky find by a construction worker on a little reservoir near Snowmass Village on October 14th, 2010. And it turned into the finest high-elevation Ice Age fossil site in the world. And when the smoke had cleared, we had put in 3,200 person days of shoveling, and we shoveled 7,000 tons by shovel and collected over 6,000 bones of Ice Age animals that included mammoths and mastodons and ground sloths and deer and horses and camels, and then a whole swath of smaller things like beavers and otters and ducks and geese. And what we got in the end was this incredible Ice Age ecosystem from Colorado with its intact climate record. So we now have this amazing picture of what Colorado was like between 130,000 years ago and 40,000 years ago, and all the plants and animals that lived there during that time. It was just an amazing sight.
What was it like to arrive there maybe in the first few days and start digging up these bones? I mean, this was really an enormous discovery here in Colorado.
When you're a kid, you kind of imagine what paleontology would be like. You go out and find these giant bones and dig them out of the ground and put them in your car and drive them home. And it never is like that. Usually the bones are all cracked and you get glued together. But at Snowmass, it was like that. We actually were pulling out these big, perfect 4-foot-long leg bones, and you could just pick them up and put them in a bag and put them in the car and drive them home. And we found those at a rate that was astonishing. There were days where we were finding 300 bones a day at Snowmass. And that got everybody so excited, and that got the whole region so excited, and everybody got involved, and it was just a gigantic 70-day digging party. It was phenomenal.
What about the rainforest just south of Denver in the Castle Rock area? In that area, a rainforest is sort of counterintuitive.
Well, I think a rainforest in the Front Range of Colorado is pretty counterintuitive. But remember, the planet changes, and it changes a lot. So 64 million years ago, when Colorado was more or less where it is now and the mountains were here, the Gulf Coast was closer, and the Gulf of Mexico was closer, and it was a much warmer, wetter time. And we were getting like 100 inches of rain in Colorado. And that rain caused rainforest as the rain bounced into the Front Range and dropped huge amounts of rain. And what's so cool about the site is when we found it, we were like, wow, a tropical rainforest. This is very unusual. Started looking into the literature of tropical rainforests and realized that this is the oldest one known in the world. So it's actually older than tropical rainforests from the tropics. That's the real surprise. So it starts to tell us some really interesting things about how tropical rainforests first appeared and where they first appeared and about the how climates have changed in Earth's history. So really big surprises, and literally on the side of I-25, right there at Wolfensberger Road exit. I mean, the most incongruous spot for a world-class discovery.
You've done a lot of work about what fossils say about global warming. Tell us a little bit about that.
I think one of the things about fossils is they give you the long story of the Earth. So here we are as humans on the planet. We can remember what it was like when we were kids, what the climate was like. It hasn't changed that much since we were kids. But as a paleontologist, I can look back in time to the ice ages, or I can look back further to the time when we had tropical rainforests. So the fossils, and plants in particular, because plants are very closely tied to climate, give you this really beautiful long story of planet Earth. And what we've learned is that the Earth has two major kinds of climate states. There's the state we call the greenhouse Earth, where there is no polar ice at all. There are forests at the poles. And there's a state called Ice House, which is where we are now, where there's ice at the poles, and every once in a while the ice comes down to mid-latitudes in these glacial events. And so you go from greenhouse to ice house to greenhouse. And really what determines whether you're in greenhouse or ice house is how much carbon is up in the atmosphere. And if the carbon's buried, you tend to have a cold climate with ice mm-hmm. in the poles. Mm-hmm. And if the carbon is up in the atmosphere, it's warm, you have forested poles, you've got no polar ice, and you have a warm planet. So that's the natural process. And what we're doing now is we actually are taking fossil fuels, fossil carbon, burning them, and putting that carbon right back up in the atmosphere, and we're going right back to a greenhouse. So with the big picture, it's pretty clear that global warming is a real thing. It's happened naturally, but it's being accelerated dramatically by our last 100 years of rapid burning of fossil fuels.
Any things or mysteries you weren't able to solve while in Denver? Anything you weren't able to accomplish that you wanted to?
Well, what I learned in Denver was if you keep looking, you'll find amazing things. I mean, we found a Tyrannosaurus rex in a house construction site in Littleton. We found a Triceratops skull up in Brighton. And what I realized in Denver is that somebody's got to keep watch, because the stuff is in the ground. The best stuff is still in the ground. And I spent 20 years watching. I would go out to construction sites and meet people and go visit those sites. So really, the amazing stuff is still out there. And I've got a great team of paleontologists here. So Denver's going to be in great shape. I just wish I could be here when the next amazing thing is uncovered somewhere in Lakewood or wherever it's going to be. But you never know. And that's the whole thing about paleontology. It's always a surprise.
Kirk, thanks so much for being here.
Hey, it's my pleasure, Andrea.
Kirk Johnson begins his job at the Smithsonian's National Museum of Natural History next week. He spent more than 2 decades at the Denver Museum of Nature and Science, which has launched a nationwide search for a replacement. Johnson spoke with CPR's Andrea Dukakis.